Welcome to the Hunts Backcountry Podcast. This is episode number 451, and our guest is Travis Ishida, who is the founder and owner of the NRL Hunter series. I'm sure many of you are familiar with NRL Hunter. Maybe you've shot one of the matches, or maybe, like myself, you've heard of it, you're roughly aware of it and how it works, but you haven't actually attended a match yet. And for some of you, I'm sure this whole concept is brand new. Today we speak with Travis about the NRL Hunter series, why he started it, and really discuss, is there a true benefit to hunters? So if you're not a competitive shooter, you have no aim to be a competitive shooter, should you still go to a hunter match? Should you consider doing it? Can you use the rifle that you hunt with? Are there other rules and regulations you need to know about? We get into all that and a whole lot more in this conversation, and I'm excited to share that with you today. Before we do dive into that conversation, just wanted to remind you that if you can leave a rating or review for this podcast, if you're enjoying it, that would help us tremendously. We don't have any advertisers, any sponsors, anything like that. We don't market the show. We don't pay to do anything. So really, this show continues and grows because of your support. And a rating or review in whatever podcast app you use where you can do it would help us out with that. Thank you for taking the time to do it. Hit pause right now if you can. Go leave that rating or review and come on right back. Let's dive into this conversation with Travis. Travis, welcome to the podcast, man. I'm excited to chat today. We were connected in person at Hunt Expo, and we were chatting, and it's like, man, we just need to hop on a podcast and talk more about what you're up to with NRL Hunter. So I'm glad we get to do that today.
Oh, absolutely, man. It's my pleasure to be here, and it was absolutely great, fantastic catching up with you at Hunt Expo and sharing some hunting stories. So I'm super, super stoked to be on the show.
Yeah, I want to come back to your hunting story from the fall. It sounded like quite an adventure with some encounters and lessons learned, so we'll get to that. But first we'll talk NRL Hunter a bit, and before we even get to that, just personal introduction background for you, Travis, like who you are and where you come from, and you know, that ties into like what made you want to start NRL Hunter. So I've seen NRL Hunter come on the scenes, but I don't know the whole backstory of you or of really NRL Hunter. So fill us in, man.
Sure. No, absolutely. So my name is Travis Ishida. I am the co-founder of the NRL. 2016, we started the NRL as what we consider a race gun series. And that means, you know, your 25-pound small caliber rifles with very little recoil. As things progressed, we started to see the less and less practicality out of those rifles. And I had met up with Scott Satterley, who's been doing shooting competitions for years. And he came up with this format of the Hunter series and was talking to me about it and wanted to turn it into something bigger than what he could do with it. So we took his idea, massaged it a little bit, and made it something that was viable to turn into a series. So my background comes from marketing. I used to do marketing for a lot of big corporate clients. That's kind of a dog eat dog world. And I moved into the outdoor space doing marketing and media creation and content creation, things of that nature. And that's what kind of led me into this whole long range game and the evolution of where we are today with the NRL Hunter. I fell in love with hunting in 2019, I think 2020 was the first year I got my first big game, and it's been an empty wallet and tons of fun since then.
That's a good way to
put it. So what's some of the rules you put on the Hunter series as far as, you know, making sure that's more hunt specific than I would say a match gun?
So some of the rules that we implemented, actually Scott took some of the rules out of the Idaho Fish and Game rules. So, for instance, we have a couple of different divisions. We have an open heavy division, and that open heavy division is a 16-pound rifle or less in weight. And that includes your optic, your bipod, anything that is attached to your rifle has to weigh in under 16 pounds. except for your sling, because that's considered a safety device for us. Then we have an open light division, which is 12 pounds or less. Then we have a factory division, which is 12 pounds or less. And then overall, there's some different instances, but for the most part, for your open light and open heavy, you're going to have to meet a minimum power factor of 380,000. And what that does is it allows us to know that you're shooting a, I don't know if the right way to say it, but a powerful enough round that would be ethical to take big game. Now, we've all shot game with smaller calibers that shoot less power factor, but this is, I believe, Idaho set that power factor, or Scott did, I can't remember. So that's where we are.
How's that power factor determined?
Bullet weight times velocity.
Okay.
So if you're shooting a 140 grain bullet at 2970, which would be fast, that's what's going to be. Multiply those two numbers together, and that's your power factor.
Yeah, gotcha. Cool.
I mean, you mentioned power factor and tying that to performance on game. I would assume that part of this, as well as what you mentioned earlier, of coming from this like race gun type setting of power factor, also being an equation of, hey, we don't want guys shooting stuff that's so light recoiling, they're just free recoiling, right? So you're lightening the rifles, as you talked about. You have a weight restriction on rifles, but then also this power factor, like the combination of those two are going to ensure that you don't end up with these crazy light recoiling, free recoil situation match guns, essentially.
Correct. What we're trying to do is keep out a lot of the small caliber wildcats, you know, the six dashers, the six BRs, the six Comets, things of that nature. We do allow a 6mm, 243 in the factory division, but we don't open it. We don't allow it in the open light or open heavy divisions. And we're trying to do that because, again, we don't want the super lightweight 6mm or smaller coming into the game and creating more of a race gun style match. So we want this to be a practical match that you can use your hunting rifle at and then go out and hunt with it. And a lot of us do that.
I'm glad all these rules and details are coming up right up front, because I anticipate that some of our listeners hearing this are already like, oh man, that's too much, too many rules, too many details, I'm out. But you can come attend, participate an NRL Hunter event and essentially not follow these rules, right? You're just not part of the competitive class. Is that correct?
That's correct. So that's what we call our skills division. Our skills division is pretty much, you don't have to follow any of the rifle requirement rules. You can shoot, you know, your grandpappy's rifle that, you know, doesn't make power factor, or you can shoot, you know, some crazy dasher or whatever you want to shoot, whatever you have in, you know, in the safe. And the skills division, we also allow you to be coached on the clock. So anybody who's completely new to this sport, who's just trying to learn how to better run their gear and kind of get their feet wet, we always encourage them to try to go to the skills division first, because it'll allow you the opportunity to watch and learn without having to go in there with a bunch of anxiety and not know what you're doing. Plus, a lot of times we'll have not only the ROs, which are range officers, there to help coach you, but we'll also set you up with like a quote-unquote professional or somebody who's experienced who can also help coach you through the match as well.
And did I see correctly, if you register for the skills division, like if you're honestly myself, right? Like I would want to show up and shoot this thing with my true hunting gear, and I'm coming from a backpacking perspective, so my gear's light and et cetera. So I know it's not going to be the best thing competitively, but I would want to come shoot this and say, I know I'm using this ultralight tripod. I know I'm using an ultralight rifle, et cetera. I'm not going to be competitive simply from an equipment standpoint, but I want to show up and just test myself, shoot in field positions, et cetera. When you do that, since you're not part of the competitive class in this skills division, it's also cheaper. Is that right?
Correct. It's about 50% on average, 50% cheaper than if you are competing for points. The reason that we do that is, number one, we don't have to track your scores on a national level. And number two, you typically don't walk the prize table, which to me is not that big of a deal. I prefer that guys come out and learn and have fun. The prize table is kind of an afterthought to me personally. But when you talk about competition, competition to me is relative, meaning if you're coming out there with your ultralight stuff, your ultralight rifle, tripod, bipod gear, the whole nine yards, to me, I would suggest to you that your goal would be like a traditional hunting scenario where all you should focus on is first round impacts on the targets that you can find and not worry about what you can't find and don't worry about the clock. The reason being is in the real world scenario, you know, most of the time, 90, I don't know the exact number, 90% of the time, 80% of the time, you only get one shot on an animal before, you know, that animal moves away. So for me, if you're new and you're truly trying to figure out how to run your gear to go on that hunt, then worry about first target, first round impacts on all your stages. If you're able to do that and hit every target the first time, that's 100%. I mean, that's huge. That's super successful. Once you get the bug and you start falling in love with it and you want to get more competitive and start going after more targets and start getting into the quote unquote game of it, then worry about competition and what gear you need to compete in versus what gear you need to hunt with.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's personally how I would look at this if I was attending, just something I do want to do. But I also, you know, Steve and I talk a lot about on this show, as hunters, we get limited opportunity in the field. We get limited time actually hunting, right? And so what are the things we can do the rest of the year? How can we become better hunters when we're not hunting? And we talk all the time about, like, it's easy to get obsessed in gear or upgrading stuff, but really it's about building skills, getting in the field. And I do think that NRL Hunter is a great opportunity for that. But I think that some people would be turned off by it a little bit because of the gaming aspect or because of these rules, or they would go to it with their setup, but quickly, I don't want to say feel intimidated, but almost get lost with what their real original goal is. And I think if you go into an NRL Hunter event as a hunter and you have expectations of, hey, I'm not here to compete, I'm not playing the game. Not that that's bad, but that's just not where I'm at right now. I'm here to, like, show up and learn about myself as a shooter in real field conditions and apply that to becoming a better hunter. I just think that that looks very different in the beginning than showing up to be a competitor or even just being concerned with that, right? Like, not being intimidated that, hey, there's this competition going on, but that's not why I'm here, and that's okay, you know?
No, absolutely. And that's just the individual's mindset, right? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
I go to these matches and I compete in a few here and there. I'll compete in the matches that I plan to hunt into those states. So if I plan on hunting in Idaho again, I'll go shoot our match in Idaho because I want to get used to the elevation. I want to get used to the terrain. And I will actually not pack everything that I would take on a hunt because I'm not going to take a tent. I'm not going to take my stove, things of that nature. But I'll pack water. I'll pack snacks, all of my stuff that I need for the match. And I'll go out there and I'll use that as a training scenario versus me trying to take first place in whatever division I'm in.
Complete random question. What's the most popular division?
Right now, the most popular division is open heavy. And then after that, believe it or not, is teams.
How does teams work, Travis?
So teams work is our teams are two individuals. It's a 16-pound rifle maximum. And you guys, instead of getting 4 minutes on the clock, you get 6 minutes on the clock. And you guys have to find range and engage together. First competitor or first hunter will go up and they will complete their course of fire. And then once they're complete, the second hunter will go through and complete the course of fire. What's cool about teams is you guys are allowed to and encouraged to obviously work together. So communication, calling wind, gathering data, target acquisition, all of these things are great when you're working in a team environment, because if that's your buddy that you're going to go hunt with later that year, next year, whatever it is, you're getting that experience and that training immediately right there, which is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, that's awesome. coming from, I've done archery competitions in the past where I coordinated them, so I got like my wheels are spinning. What kind of prizes are guys winning for first and second place at these?
Oh man, it's different in every match. Like this past weekend, we had a match in Oklahoma. We gave away a full rifle build. We're talking, you know, Leopold Mark Fives. 6 Hour has been giving away 10Ks, crosses. Really Right Stuff puts tripods, like full tripod kits, on some of the tables. I mean, they're high value prizes. Vortex does, you know, their Fury 5000s and some optics and some stuff. So it's truly a blessing with a lot of our sponsors. They've been awesome.
Yeah. And then what's the average cost to enter?
The average cost to enter is going to be about $250 to $275 for the entire weekend. And then that gets you fed on Saturday. That'll get you lunch. You'll get snacks. And then Sunday, we have an awards banquet or awards ceremony, and that'll get you a meal at that point as well. So two meals and a weekend full of fun.
Awesome.
And so the non-competitive class would be roughly half-ish that, you said, like $150 or something?
Yeah, 150, 175, somewhere right around there. You know, they get fed, they get to come out and partake in everything. They just don't track their scores and they don't get to walk the prize table. The reason that we don't allow them to walk the prize table is because a lot of times somebody who is a more seasoned hunter or competitor will be there coaching them and helping them out. So it's not a fair one-to-one competition, if that makes sense.
You've described things and said things that I understand, but I'm assuming that some of our listeners, especially people who this whole concept is new and they're wanting to hear more about it, may not make sense. So I know this is a very dumb question, apparently. No. when you already know what it means, it's a dumb question. But what is a stage? What is a course of fire? What is find, range, and engage? I know some of that's very self-explanatory, but what I'm leading to is, for someone who's not seen the YouTube videos, because you guys do have a lot of great content out there, and I'm sure plenty of our audience has seen that. They know what this event is and they know what we're talking about, but I also know a big chunk of listeners won't know, and maybe their interest is piqued. So I want to paint them a picture of what the heck are we talking about. Like, what can they practically expect if they want to show up and shoot one of these things with their hunting rifle? What is a stage? What is a course of fire, etc.?
Absolutely. So excuse me. A stage is a area that has been designated for a designated course of fire, I guess, is how we would explain it. Every match is going to have a minimum of 12 stages. The match that we're coming up to this weekend has 22 stages. On average, they're going to be around 18 to 20 stages. Each stage is a designated area where a course of fire is laid out for you to be able to engage. A course of fire is the order in which you are going to engage targets. So, for example, we could have a couple of different scenarios. The first one would be a one position for our targets. When you come up to the stage, you will see a placard that tells you it is going to be, the course of fire is going to be one position for targets, and it's going to be near to far. What that means is you're going to run up to a glassing area that has been pre-designed for you. You're going to have a left and right lateral limits and a sighting post. If you stand directly over that sighting post and start to glass the area between the left and right lateral limits, you will be able to find all four targets. From there, you will move into a designated shooting area. In that area, you have free rein to develop any kind of position that you are comfortable with to that space. Within that space, you will start to engage your targets near or far. Your first target will always have a placard designating what that is. So when you got your stage reef, let's say it's all elk. So the first elk will have a big placard next to it. It'll usually be designated by the stage number. So let's say stage one. And then there's going to be an elk within, I believe it's 10 yards of that is what the new rules are. And then from there, you know that the other three elk are going to be further away because it's near to far. So then you have to find those three other elk. That's the seek and destroy or find and engage. So you're going to find the target and then you're going to engage it. So as I'm looking at those elk, I am going to be gathering data such as yardage and my dope. I'm going to be writing that information down on my arm board, and then I'll move to find the second, third, and fourth target. If I don't find any one of those targets, depending on what order it is in, I can choose to skip that target, or I can just skip them all entirely if I don't have, you know, any more time, whatever the situation may be. So the stage is the area that you're going to shoot in. The course of fire is how you're going to engage the targets on that stage. And we'll typically have 18 to 20 stages per match.
What size are these targets? I mean, I'm sure they vary just in general. You said elk. Is it a full body steel elk with a vitals, or what are you looking at?
So at different matches, we have different target arrays. This past match we were at, we were blessed to have full size elk with vitals. So if you shot that elk anywhere but the vital, it was a miss. Mm-hmm. At majority, because of cost, you know, I mean, I think that elk was like a $3,000 target. Majority of the matches, you're going to have vital shape or animal shape targets. And those are going to be about 2 MOA, or they're going to be about the size of what that vital would be on that animal.
Obviously, it depends on the match and where it's located, but you're trying to somewhat hide the targets out there, make them hard to find?
Yes and no. We try to put them in natural areas where you would find that species. So again, referring back to the match we just had in Oklahoma, we were on a creek trail. And that particular stage, one of the stages had otters. So we had positioned 4 otters around the creek bed, because that's typically where you would find otters.
And then what is the time aspect? I know we mentioned this earlier, but for an individual, you said 4 minutes. Is that correct?
Correct. So the individual has 4 minutes and the team has 6 minutes. Typically, the way that we break that down, especially for newer people or newer hunters, is you'd want to use 2 minutes to find and gather data, and then 2 minutes to engage those targets that you find. If it's a team, it'd be the same thing, where the team works for 2 minutes to find everything. The first hunter would go up for 2 minutes, and the second hunter would go up for 2 minutes. And then from there, you'd be able to find your flow.
Is the range officer, who's like, you know, obviously in charge of safety and things at this stage, but also the timer and the score, are they proactively communicating time to you as it's elapsing, or is it up to you to ask, or can you even ask? Do you have to keep it yourself?
So you're more than welcome to ask, and 90% of the matches that we go to, we allow the range officers to provide time. The only instances that we don't allow them to provide time is if it's an overly complicated stage where they're watching too many different things. And in those cases, you know, we'll usually have multiple range officers on those type of stages just to make sure everything's safe.
When you described this course of fire that we were just talking about with the elk, the 4 elk, near to far, et cetera. So in this course of fire, there's 4 targets in 1 position. You called that out. So I'm assuming some stages of fire are, 1, not going to be from a single position, and then 2 may not have 4 targets, right? So I guess there's variability in your positions and the number of targets per stage that can exist?
Correct. So it'll always, your stages will have 3 different designs. It's either going to be 1 position, 4 targets, 2 positions, 2 targets, or 4 positions, 1 target. So those are the only 3 ways that a stage can be designed.
So there's always 4 targets, but it's a mix of positions you may be moving in. And you're doing like 2 targets from this first position, 2 targets from a second position.
Correct.
I'm trying to think through all the questions that paint the picture. Oh, distance. What is a range of distances? I know we talked a little bit about target size that may be, you know, roughly 2 MOA. But over the course of what distances do these tend to occur?
So the maximal allowable range that our rules allow is 1,000 yards. And we encourage our match directors, or the people that are running the matches for us, to put the targets at realistic hunting ranges for their topography, for their area. The majority of the targets you're going to find are going to be between 400 and 600 yards on average. The reason we allow that 1,000-yard target is we've all been to a Bass Pro, or we've been sitting around with a buddy or whoever who said, oh, yeah, I shot that deer at 1,000 yards. And it's like, dude, you don't even know what 1,000 yards is. You can't even explain to me what 1,000 yards is. So we set that target out at that range so that people can get a reality of what it really takes to shoot a 1,000-yard target. Because it's not easy when everything's calm, and it makes it even more stressful when you're under time. But when it's an animal, there's very few people in the world, in my opinion, that can ethically take that shot.
What do you see? It's either a hit or nothing, right? There's not like an archery shoot where there's a 5-ring, 8-ring, 10-ring. How's that scoring work?
So it's a you get two shots per target. Your first shot will give you 2 points. If you hit it, you move on to the next target. If you miss it, you can re-engage with one shot for 1 point. If you miss that, that target's neutralized. It ran off. So you have to move to the next target. So you get two opportunities on every stage. So the maximum round count you could do per stage would be 8 shots, which makes it, you know, a lot more affordable than some of the race gun type stuff where you're doing 10 to 20 shots a stage.
Mm-hmm. So max score, if there's 12 targets, is going to be, well, I guess you said 12 stages, so it could be up to four targets a stage. So it gets up there. Yeah. I'm curious, like, what the average guy who wins one of these, his score is he hitting 75% of his targets on the first shot?
90%.
90%
plus. Like, Matt, I'm sure, I don't know if you guys know Matt Allwine. I'm sure you heard the name if you don't know him.
I know Matt.
Okay. So Matt's had many a matches where he's only dropped, you know, 1 to 5 targets, 1 to 5 points. So somebody like Matt Allwine, John Pinch, Rusty Ulmer, the guys who have been doing the precision rifle game and are prolific hunters, you know, this is practice for them. They're coming out and they're having fun. And these are typically the guys that will help spool up or coach some of the skills guys.
Cool.
Now, your average, what we try to do is we try to keep their average hit ratio right around 60% or so, 60, 70%. That gives the newer hunter an opportunity to hit targets, but also makes it challenging enough for them to be able to test their skills.
So going back to a hunter who may be listening, who's never done anything like this before, we talked about they can show up. They don't have to follow power factor if they don't want to. They just want to show up and shoot the skills division and use their hunting setup. But beyond their rifle, what do they, I don't want to say need to show up with, what would you recommend that they show up with?
So I would recommend that they show up with obviously a good pack. They need to have a bipod on their rifle and a variable optic. So something that they can zoom in and out of. 15 power optic is going to be plenty. For gear, a tripod is going to be absolutely needed. And then binos and a rangefinder. And if you're fortunate enough to have a rangefinding bino, that's even better. Kestrels are great to gather data if you're familiar with how to use them. If not, Kestrel puts on a bunch of online classes to teach you guys how to do that. But the other part of that is we don't want people going out there and necessarily having to buy a bunch of gear. So the NRL has a loaner program. So if you're coming out and you're a member, you get first right at any of our loaner gear. And that's everything from full rifle builds to bipods, tripods, packs, shooting bags, you name it. If you're a non-member, then you can still loan or borrow our gear as long as it's not being borrowed by a member first. So it's something where we're trying to allow you guys to test stuff before you buy it to make sure it's what you guys actually want and that it's going to be useful for your type of hunting.
What's membership involve?
Membership is $100 for the entire year. The membership gets you tracking of all of your points and scores. It gets you early registration access to all of our matches. And then we have different discounts and things of that nature through some of our sponsors and whatnot. And it's how we keep our doors open.
I'm curious for you personally, Travis, you mentioned previously that these days you're more prone to go to events where you may be hunting in that year. So like, oh, I know I'm going to hunt Idaho this year. I'm going to go to this Idaho NRL hunter. To elaborate on that, And I know you talked about using that as a training opportunity, not just a competition. What I for you, and I know this is all personal, right? But for you right. in that scenario, what are you taking or doing differently for the NRL Hunter event versus what you would take on the hunt? Meaning, are you truly going to that NRL hunting event with your rifle that you would hunt with and
Absolutely.
The tripod you would hunt with and all that stuff? Or are you making any substitutions?
No. So all of the gear that I've ever competed with in NRL Hunter has been my hunting gear. So I'll take the rifle that I plan on shooting, providing that I have it in my possession at that time. If it's being built, then I'll take another rifle that would be similar. I'll take a lighter weight tripod, something that I'm comfortable with and practice with, that I'm comfortable shooting out to about 500 yards with. So I'm not going to take my big, heavy, really right stuff for Leo Photo tripod. I'll take something lightweight. I'll take the pack that I plan on hunting with. And that's huge because I'm not trying to plug you guys or anything per se, but before I was using your pack, I was using a couple of other major brands and they just never fit me right. And I didn't know what I didn't know. So I was literally at a match and I was wearing my pack that I had. And I was complaining about shoulder strain and my back hurting. And a buddy of mine who's much more experienced backpacker than I am came and actually adjusted the pack to my back. And it felt better, but it still didn't sit right the way that the shoulder straps were rubbing against my neck. But ever since then, I learned from a friend at that match how to set up my pack proper. I was fortunate enough to purchase one of your packs last year for my Idaho elk hunt. And I, like, no joke, we went a mile and a half, a mile, three quarters in, 1,700 feet of elevation. And that pack gave me zero issues at all. And it carried everything that I needed for my stay in country. So I took, I take things that I am going to hunt with because I need to make sure that they are not going to fail on me when I'm on that hunt. Another great example is I just bought some Kennetrek boots from the Hunt Expo. And so that's my match boot for the rest of the season so that I can get them broken in, make sure that they fit proper, they're wearing proper. That way, when I go hunting this season, I know that those boots are going to do everything that I need them to do in the country. So I will literally take whatever I plan on taking to that hunt with me when I'm going to a match.
I think it's great. I have seen some matches as well that the weather is terrible. It's cold, it's rainy, it's wet. Like, what a cool opportunity to not only test yourself and be in those conditions from a shooting perspective, but as you said, kind of test the whole system, test your gear, test your clothing. You know, it's like, oh, I have this match this weekend, I paid for it, the weather's terrible. Well, I'm going to go shoot in some crappy conditions and see how I perform and see how my gear performs.
No, absolutely. Like this match coming up in Colorado, they're expecting a huge storm to come through. It's going to be wet. It's going to be rainy. At the same time, we have a match the same weekend in, where is that? In Georgia, I believe it's at. And they had floods where half the range just got washed out and they're expecting more rain. So these are like real world scenarios where if you want to use it for the training aspect of it, it's not going to get any more real. You're in country. I mean, I guess the only difference would be is the mentality of knowing that at the end of the day, you get to go back to your hotel or your camper and dry off. But when you're in the field, you're in the suck or you're in the sun. It is what it is.
You mentioned Colorado to Georgia. I know we asked you earlier, you have matches all the way on the West Coast where you're at. So it sounds like you're covering the country pretty good. And there's not an NRL Hunter event everywhere by any means, but you're covering the whole country, sounds like, from coast to coast.
Now, we've truly been blessed. This year, we have 24 matches in 8 months. So our season runs January to August, and we stop the qualifying season in July. The championship or the Grand Slam is in August. And we've just been really blessed to be able to have these many matches. 22 of them are here in stateside. Two of them are in Canada. It'll be our first time going to Canada, and we're super, super excited for that.
Is there much of a physical aspect to these events? Are you hiking, 10, 12 miles, or is it generally like just a couple miles?
Generally, it's going to be just a couple of miles.
Okay.
We have some matches where you could do up to 4 or 5 miles, but generally it's just going to be a few miles. But the terrain, depending on the geographic location of that match, is going to be, you know, up and down, and you're climbing up hills and back down and so on and so forth. So mm-hmm. it's not like an extreme match where, you know, you have to go 10 mile, you know, hike 10 miles in, shoot, and then hike 10 miles out and shoot and blah, blah, blah. We're trying to get it so that it's good enough to test what you have, but not going to break the guy who's so new that he's not physically fit for it.
Yeah, gotcha.
That made me think of, you know, I was thinking of that, the physical demands and accessibility for different folks. That made me think of kids. What is there a minimum age? Like, I could, my son's 12 now and he's shooting a bit, but I could see this being something really fun we do together in the years to come. So talk a little bit about maybe getting youth involved or minimums so there.
We do have a youth division, and the youth division is absolutely a ton of fun to watch. I'd have to go back and remember what the exact rule was in the NRL Hunter rules. I think it's like 8 years old. But we've had young guns, is what we call them, as young as 7 years old come out and compete. As long as the child is competent and able to safely handle that rifle and their parent guardian is with them, we're okay with them coming out to learn these skill sets. With the young guns, it's just a young gun division. They have a maximum weight limit of 16 pounds, just like everybody else, but they can shoot whatever platform they want. They still have to meet power factor. They still have to follow the rules. But on the clock, their parent, coach, guardian is allowed to basically do everything with them except pull the trigger. So they can help them find targets. They can help them dial their dope. They can help them build a position. They could do everything with them and coach them along the way. They just can't pull the trigger. So yeah, it's really, really cool. There's a lot of father, son, or even father, daughter. There's a great father, daughter team this weekend that was shooting out there. They weren't a team. They were shooting as individuals, but they worked together as a team when she shot so that she would have a better experience and learn. Ultimately, that's the whole thing. I don't care, really, personally, I don't care who gets the trophy. I care who wins the most.
I noticed on the website there was, I want to say, quote unquote, regular, but there was like NRL matches and events. And then there was one specifically like categorized under the label of like NRL Hunter Games. Are those two different things? And if so, what's the difference there?
They are two different things. So the regular NRL Hunter matches are 2-day national level matches. The NRL Hunter Games are 1-day regional matches. The way I kind of like to describe it is it's like going to the driving range. So at the 1-day matches, at the Hunter Games matches, you're actually, it's a lot simpler. There are no power factor or rifle requirements. You can shoot whatever you want. You can be coached as much as you want. You can go up to the RO and say, hey, I know what I'm doing. I just want to run through the course, and he'll let you do that. Or you can come up and say, hey, I'm brand new. I have no idea what I'm doing. Can you help me through it? And the Hunter Games matches, we show you, if you want, we will show you where the targets are and help you confirm your data. So the Hunter Games are a way for you to get your feet wet and learn before going to a 2-day national match. Now, through the Hunter Games, you can qualify to go to the Grand Slam. However, if you make it to the Grand Slam, you have to follow regular 2-day national level rules.
Cool. I feel like that covers a lot on NRL Hunter, Travis. Are there any other like common questions or misconceptions about the events that you see or that you get that we kind of didn't touch on?
I guess the biggest thing would be the intimidation factor. I mean, I know there's a lot of guys who get intimidated where they hear, you know, when they hear the word competition. And I know that there's a lot of guys out there that are seasoned hunters that don't want to go out and necessarily, quote unquote, embarrass themselves. The simple fact of the matter is none of us people really care. Meaning, if you zero a stage, nobody cares. We've all zeroed stages. If you clean a stage, we're all going to be super stoked for you. We're competitors, but more to the core and at the heart of it, we want everybody to succeed. I'm tongue-tied already. Sorry about that. We want everybody to have fun. We want everybody to learn. So check your ego. Don't worry about it. Come out. Have fun. And if you come out and are a sponge and you want to learn and you want to get better, everybody's going to help you. I've never been to a match where somebody wasn't going to teach you something or loan you a piece of equipment. It's just an absolutely phenomenal community that we built, and the more people, the merrier.
I'm sure it depends on the event, but how many people are there, just to get an idea of kind of size?
Our average matches are going to range between 80 and 125 hunters, competitors.
Okay. And then how do you handle start times? Is it like a shotgun start, or everyone has like a scheduled, you're at stage one at 10:10, you're at stage one at 10:30?
No, so unlike a TAC event where you have like 2,000 or 3,000, 4,000 people where you do shotgun times, you know, with that many people, you have to. For us, when you come in and check in on Friday, we'll put you into a squad. And basically that means, like, if you're in squad five, you're going to start on stage five. And that's all that means. And from there, as soon as you complete it, you're going to move on to the next one. So depending on how many stages we have and how many hunters we have, we'll divide that up into the right amount of squad or people per squad per stage. And that's where you'll start.
Got it.
So it's really cool because you get to hang out with your buddies. All of the stages are blind, so we don't allow talking during the match of the stages. But you could always find out, you know, what, you know, hunting stories or what gear people are using. I mean, there's always something to talk about and kind of BS a little bit with your buddies and have some fun.
Travis, I did want to touch on some hunting experiences you've had. I know you said you kind of started hunting big game a handful of years ago, and I'm sure I've learned over that, and it's probably been really cool to be connected with an arrow hunter and personally hunting, and just that whole journey aligning, I'm sure, has been neat. We chatted a little bit at Hunt Expo about your elk hunt from this past fall, so I don't know if we want to focus on that, but I guess broadly, I'm just curious what that journey over the last few years has been like for you, more from the hunting perspective than just the shooting, just the match directing, that type of thing. So I know it's super open-ended. Take that where you want to go. But what have been some of your takeaways from this hunting journey?
So I'm a first-generation hunter in my family. Nobody in my family hunts or has hunted. I don't think anybody in my family really owned a firearm before I did, as far as like my immediate family, like my mother, father, you know, sisters, brothers, none of them were really into the firearms. I got into hunting because of one of my best friends was a hunter. And so he invited me to go out with him and his father. And we went out there, and I mean, I didn't know anything. I was asking him, and he was a part-time hunter. You know, he did it when there was an opportunity. And I absolutely fell in love with it. I was like, this is awesome being outdoors. This is awesome going to these different adventures, seeing different parts of the state. At that time, I was staying in California. And then when, you know, things started to progress more and more, I became more interested in being able to provide food for my family. So a lot of people, you know, they talk about, you know, a trophy hunt and a dream hunt. My dream and my trophy is not antler or horn or rack size. It's being able to put food in the freezer for my family. So since my first elk hunt, which was at the end of 2020 or 2021, when I first harvested, I have not bought red meat from the grocery store for my family. Everything red meat wise that we eat, I've killed. The first animal I took to a butcher, my first big game was a cow elk. I took that to a butcher. And that was absolutely fantastic. Everything since then, my wife and I have processed ourselves. So I really, the culture, the knowledge, the adventure, the blessings that I've had with hunting. You know, I've been to South Africa already. I've hunted axis deer in Hawaii. All of these things would have never been a reality to me 10 years ago. And now it's my lifestyle. I think it's part of my lifestyle. It's something that I talk about constantly. It's something that I'm planning constantly for the next adventure. And it's something that my family is super, super proud to be a part of. I mean, my 7-month-old daughter's eating, you know, white-tailed deer from Missouri off of my friend's place that we harvested last season. So it's something that I'm super, super grateful for, something that I'm super passionate about. And as long as my body holds out, I'll continue to do it.
That's awesome, man. I love that. It's easy when, you know, we obviously, this podcast we've been doing forever, we've been hunting a long time. We speak with guys who've been hunting forever, but the basic perspective, like that you have being a newer hunter and just the gratefulness and not getting lost in, you know, all the finer details and getting caught up in antlers and inches, which we try to avoid as well. But it just hearing that perspective is refreshing and cool, man. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, I mean, like all of my mounts are Euro mounts, and they're just reminders of stories of that adventure. I mean, literally, in my office, I have a mount of the first mule deer that I shot with a bow, and it's barely a forky. I mean, not barely, it's a forky. And I mean, it's mounted, you know, nobody would usually mount that, but that was the first animal I ever shot with a bow. And then right above that, I have a very respectable axis deer that, you know, that I shot on my honeymoon. And it's not, you know, I have it set up that way because it's like, hey, I started with one of the smallest animals legally that I could shoot. And I was fortunate enough, you know, not that many years later to be able to hunt axis deer and get this amazing animal. So to me, it's not, you know, again, I don't care about the rack or the, you know, whatever. It's those two animals fed or are still feeding my family. So that's the memory and the respect that I have for the animal.
Very cool. I did think of a match question that I kind of want to circle back to. So again, just trying to help paint a little bit of a picture, provide some expectations for people who this is all new. We mentioned previously, like, what a stage is, and it can be multiple position. We mentioned gear-wise, you know, it'd be good to have a bipod. It'd be good to have a tripod, essentially.
Right.
I guess two questions related to positions and support. Are people free to use whatever they want to use for support? Like, if they, like, a hunting situation, something we've used a lot, we talk a lot about, is shooting from, like, a pack. Shooting
Absolutely.
From trekking poles, etc. And then also, are any of the positions for a stage, do they include potentially natural support? Like, oh, here's the shooting position. By the way, there's this giant rock here, or there's this tree here, etc. Like, again, from a realistic hunting situation, do those types of scenarios also exist?
Absolutely. So 85-90% of the matches, 85-90% of the positions are going to be natural. So off a rock, prone in the, you know, in the field, off a tree, whatever it may be naturally. Some of our matches, we're going to have some man-made props, but those are props that you will or you could see in a hunting scenario. So an example of that would be like a cattle gate. Or it might be... I don't know, like some of our matches we've done, we've used a vehicle. Like if you're predator hunting, you see, you know, you have to get out of the vehicle and then shoot that predator from the side of the road if you're coyote hunting or something of that nature. But again, majority of our props are going to be natural terrain, and that's what we're trying to encourage. Now, as far as support, we highly encourage you to use anything that you can carry. So your pack is a huge, I think it's one of the most underrated and least utilized pieces for support for shooting positions. We do see a handful of people do it, but it's not implemented as much as I think it should be. So we encourage it, but again, it's up to the hunter's discretion with what they're comfortable with.
Steve, any final questions?
No, I just kind of want to go shoot a match. Check it out. I'm like looking at the schedule online, like, all right, what can I pull off this summer?
Well, whenever you guys are ready, man, just give me a call and we would love to have you guys out there as our guests. And I would love to, honestly, you know, we've been blessed with having a lot of hunters come out to our matches and experience it. But I'm always interested to hear from people that I admire as hunters, you guys, and to get your feedback of what is great about the match and what should be changed about the match to make it a better training scenario for the average Joe. So I would love for your guys' R&D and opinions and thoughts on what we're doing.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think that that also goes back to what we talked about, Travis, with people's expectations and what they go into it with, right? Like,
right.
Two different people can show up to the same match and shoot the same stages, same courses of fire, but use different approaches and have a different mindset and expectation, and they're going to have very different experiences. So I think some of what as we've discussed, like, how practical is this for hunting? How beneficial is this specifically for hunting? Well, that's really up to you, right? Like, what are Absolutely. You bringing into this from a gear mindset perspective? What are you trying to get out of it? And then, you know, there's competitors who that's going to look different, and that's fine. That I think that's great, right? Like, people can go into this and have the same event, same weekend, have a bunch of fun either way, and have different experiences and have different goals and meet those goals. It's cool.
No, absolutely. I'll give you a quick, I know we're coming up to that hour, just over it. I'll give you a quick scenario, a true to life scenario that took place. We had a young gentleman, I think he's 13 years old, who started shooting the NRL Hunter matches with his father. That same season, he had a deer tag and was confident and capable enough after shooting like 3 or 4 NRL Hunter matches that he shot a deer standing off a tripod at 400 yards and dropped it with one shot. And that to me is like the ultimate testament that somebody was able to learn the skill set and obtain the confidence to take a shot that he had practiced so many times before in a NRL Hunter match that shot, which for most people is very difficult, but mm-hmm. he had the confidence and ability and skill set to pull it off and make it work. So those are the reasons that we do the NRL Hunter, is to make people better, ethical and competent and confident hunters.
I know you guys have obviously websites, social media, podcast, et cetera. Easy to find information, Travis, but at the same time, go ahead and give listeners the scoop, and I'll leave links in the show description as well.
Awesome. Yeah. Everything's you can search NRL Hunter, nrlhunter.org is the website. NRL Hunter social media, for the YouTube, it's National Rifle League, which is the parent company of all the NRL stuff. But yeah, we're out there. I mean, if you have questions, hit us up. We're super stoked to invite new people out there and we're just glad to be part of this amazing community.
Well, there you have it, guys. I hope that you enjoyed this conversation, learned more about the NRL Hunter events, and maybe you can go to one for yourself. Take your hunting kit, go test yourself as a shooter, and go learn. I know that you would certainly learn. As Travis mentioned, there are many resources that are easy to find. The schedule, videos, you can get a really good feel for what NRL Hunter is like by watching some of that content, and I will leave links in the show description for all of that. Also in the show description, you'll find our contact information, as well as a link to the full episode archive of all the podcasts that we've been putting out since 2015. So if you have other topics in mind, go search the podcast archive, and I'm sure you can probably find a podcast on that. And whether you do or you don't, if you have any podcast topic questions or suggestions for us, send an email to podcast@exomontgear.com. It would be great to hear from you, and we'll talk to you soon.